Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavs.
And I am Brad Rowland, the host of Locked On Hawks.
So today, Brad and I are collaborating as part of the Locked On Podcast Network's NBA Preview Week. I don't know if it's the official term, but we're just going to go with it. What we're doing this week is we're working with other Locked On NBA podcasts in each team's respective conference and just sort of previewing teams and just kind of starting to explore some of the different matchups we're going to see this NBA season. For Cavs listeners out there, we're talking to Brad because the Cavs have seen the Hawks in the playoffs the last 2 years. They're a team, I think, that changed a lot this offseason, but they still should be pretty good. And, it's a team that I think, even though Cavs fans will rag on them a lot, have been very good, and they're still going to be very relevant in the East this upcoming year.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear why the Hawks fans would know why we're talking to the Cavs. But, the Cavs are kind of at the top of the mountain, and the Hawks want to get there. And I'm spoiler alert, they're probably not going to get there this year. But, hey, it's something to aspire to, and should be a good talk for us.
Yeah, and so what the format of this podcast is going to be, we each came up with three questions that we're going to ask the opposite person, and we're just going to run through those, answer them, have a little back and forth, and just sort of go on. And just to give a little overview of both teams, so the Hawks, they added Dwight Howard, Torian Prince, and they re-signed Kent Bazemore. They traded Jeff Teague to the Indiana Pacers, and Al Horford signed with the Boston Celtics. For the Cavs, they traded for Mike Dunleavy, paid for the pick, and signed Kay Felder, re-signed LeBron James. That guy matters. And
who's that guy?
He's the guy who sings Kevin Love a happy birthday song on Instagram by screaming at a picture of chunky Kevin Love when he's at UCLA. They added Chris Anderson, they lost Matthew Dellavedova, and they lost Timofey Mozgov and NBA champion Sasha Khan. So both teams have been through some changes. The Hawks, I think, is probably, be fair to say, is a little bit more of the drastic one, or at least identity shifting. But I think they're both interesting in their own ways. And to start with the Hawks, I'm going to ask you this question, Brad, that I don't know what to expect yet, and this is, I guess, why I'm asking it. What are you expecting out of point guard Dennis Schroeder, who obviously is going to be the new starter in place of Teague?
It's going to be interesting for Dennis. Dennis is a very combustible personality, a guy who has no trouble with confidence, I would say. He's a borderline cockier, maybe not so borderline. So I think Dennis is a guy who thinks he's going to be very, very good right away, first-year starter. He's still very young. He's 22 years old. He'll be 23 when the season gets going. But it's a guy who I'm expecting some the general consensus in Atlanta is that he's going to be suddenly an average or better starting point guard. I'm not sure I'm ready to make that leap just yet, but I think he'll be a productive guy. He's going to stuff the stat sheet. He averages a lot of points and assists, and really kind of just is a high volume stat guy and that's probably because his insanely high usage when he's been playing in the backup role. That's probably going to go down a little bit, but Dennis it'll be fun to watch and intriguing. I'm not sure he's going to be as good as Jeff T was a year ago. What do you think about him on the outside looking? I'm interested to hear what the consensus is outside of Atlanta, because I feel like I'm lower on him than most people are around the Hawks, but it might just be me, or might be that I'm closer to the consensus outside of Atlanta.
I'm not a huge fan of Dennis Schroeder, to be quite honest. He frustrates me, and I know, and this is sort of a lazy comparison, but he frustrates me in the same way that Rondo frustrates me, because he dribbles so much, and I don't really think... I mean, him not being a good shooter is probably my biggest gripe, just because I think shooting just matters so much from that spot right now, and he's only making about 32% of his threes, and just doesn't really space the floor. I like some aspects of his game. I think he's a good passer. I think he's a capable defender when he wants to be. But I don't look at him, and he's 22, so I guess it's not fair to really judge him fully yet. But I just don't think, that guy is clearly going to be an upgrade over Jeff Teague, which I think is maybe what they're hoping, or at least cost-effectively. But again, Mike Budenholzer is probably smarter. He is smarter than me, so he probably knows something. He's clearly got to think there's something there for them to do this. And at the same time, I don't necessarily think Teague – I like Teague a lot, but I don't necessarily think he was so overwhelmingly good that this isn't justifiable if the Hawks really believe in Schroeder.
No, I was definitely okay with him moving on from Teague. I thought that was, you know, one of the worst-kept secrets around Atlanta was that they were going to move on from Teague. It was always going to be Schroeder. This is, Schroeder is sort of this new regime's guy. Teague was around prior to Mike Budenholzer and Wes Wilcox, the GM. And I'm not sure that, you know, they didn't, like, dislike Teague by any means, but I think Dennis is sort of their guy. He's also younger, and he'll be a restricted free agent at the end of next year, whereas Teague would have been unrestricted. So without getting too deep, it was always going to happen this way. I'm kind of with you on Dennis, though. The shooting is a problem, especially with some of the other moves they made that I'm sure we'll talk about. Spacing is going to be an issue for this team this year, and Schroeder's going to have to improve as a jump shooter in order to be even top 15-ish one guard in the league down the road. I think that's his ceiling's certainly that high, but the shooting is going to be, you know, the last sort of thing for him, I think, where if he's not able to at least be a league average 3-point shooter, it's going to be really, really tough for him to succeed in the top way that he possibly can, because teams are just going to play off of him, especially with the lack of shooting around and outside of Kyle Korver.
Yeah, and I just will say this. I am hard on him a little bit, but I feel really weird writing the book on a guy when he's 22. And he's only played a little over 200 games and only played 18 minutes a game for his first 3 years. So, like, I feel weird saying, like, okay, this is him. But, yeah, I'm with you. I just don't really know. I just don't know if I look and think, oh, I'm very confident that he is going to be this, you know, great player. I think you're right. The potential's certainly there. And he does some things really, really well. He does kind of that Rondo thing, like when Rondo was actually good, where he can just kind of draw defenses in and then blow by them despite not being overly fast. And like he has all these things he does really well. There's just the things that I think that become frustrating with him.
Absolutely. He's a polarizing guy. He's a super athletic, super long. He really can be a good defender. You mentioned that earlier. When he's locked in, he's going to be a good defender, but there's just certain things that he doesn't do particularly well, and shooting is kind of a glaring weakness, and even finishing around the rim, he sort of tries to shoot all these like kind of fancy scoop shots and things that don't, they're not high percentage looks. He's not going to be an efficient guy, I think maybe ever. That's always going to be the knock on him, is his sort of a low efficiency, high usage player, and those are not technically, not, you know, usually the guys that I fall in love with. So I think it's more of a thing that casual fans might like Schroeder more than people around the league, because people I've talked to are kind of in the same boat as you and I, as to be pretty skeptical about Schroeder, at least right away.
Yeah, I think that so you answered my question exactly how I figured you would, but I think it was super informative.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously weren't going to spend the whole time talking about the Hawks, so I wanted to ask you a couple of Cavs things also. First off, I guess it's one that I know you guys probably are worried about, at least to some extent, and that's, the possibility of this team sort of coasting after winning the title, especially LeBron. Should we be prepared for LeBron to kind of coast even more, sit out more games, and even really the rest of the team having any sort of a hangover after the biggest season in franchise history and really the city of Cleveland in quite some time?
This is the question that I think will ultimately define the Cavs season in a lot of ways. I think they clearly have coasted at times. Like, they just don't look like they care all the time. And this team, they've said this so many times since the season ended, and it just baffles me that this is ever a thing. They thrive on drama, and they thrive on people thinking they're not the best or thinking they're, you know, not going to win the East or something. Like, they thrive on that. And I think they have this weird thing because of LeBron where I think they actually can turn this gear. I don't always think it's the smartest thing in the world, and I think there's going to be a time where it will catch up to them in some way. This past year you had in the Eastern Conference Finals, it looked like the Raptors were going to make that little run, and they won those two games, and it was like, oh, this is actually a series, and then the Cavs, you know, went home and took care of things. But I don't know how to exactly answer this, just because I think you might have them coast as a team, but I almost don't think LeBron is going to coast as much as I think people think he will. For one, I think he has said that he wants to win another MVP or alluded to it. I think he really, really enjoys being slighted, and I think that that certain team out in Oakland has LeBron feeling a type of way about how people view him, and it's his own thing. I mean, I don't know if you know about how LeBron watches The Godfather all the time.
Oh, yes, I've heard that story.
I think next season really might be like the peak of petty LeBron and just like angry slighted LeBron. Like, I think he's actually a legit MVP candidate because I don't think he, besides being great, I think he's actually going to play enough and be good enough all year. But I think you will see times where this team does kind of not play up to their potential. I mean, I've said this a couple times in other podcasts. I think the December 26th game, the day after they play the Warriors in Cleveland, they're going to Detroit. I've already marked that as a loss on the schedule. They're going to go to that game. JR is going to be being JR, and LeBron's not going to play, and Kevin's not going to play, and you're going to have, like, Chris Anderson and KFL, they're picking rolls for 40 minutes or something, like, really terrible. But as someone who's watched the Cavs from the outside and isn't, I guess I'm a little bit more just the defensive of the team for whatever it's worth. What do you think that's, like, an actual thing that is a possibility? And do you think it's worrisome that a team could coast that much?
I'm kind of with you that LeBron's not the guy you should worry about. If you're talking about this, it's the other guys. It's, you know, it's guys who aren't maybe as motivated as LeBron or as focused or have a history of being as focused as LeBron does. I think if there's anything to worry about with LeBron, it's that, you know, he takes more games off. Maybe that's something I would almost recommend for him long term, because, you know, there's so many miles on those tires for LeBron. And we all know he's a freak, but at some point it's probably going to be good to start capping some of his playing time a little bit more. So I'd be worried about that more than I would be about him actually coasting, because I think you're right about Golden State and that, you know, LeBron's going to be extra motivated to sort of prove that it wasn't a fluke or anything like that last season. But, you know, guys like, I don't know if JR's around or Shump
is 100% to me the guy that I think might just, like, tank it, because it's like weird because he's been hurt the last couple of years and stuff. When he's had shoulder injuries, he has been good, but he just isn't engaged all the time. And I think his role is sort of secure. So I feel like to me Shump is the guy that I think might coast a little bit. And JR, obviously, he's going to have nights where he's just, you know, being JR Smith.
Yeah, JR is just JR. What about Kyrie, real quick? I mean, is that a guy you worry about at all? I mean, obviously, there was a lot made of his celebration tour after the title win. I wouldn't be terribly worried, but how's that playing locally? And that, Kyrie's a guy who's not been the most durable guy in the past, too. Is there any concern about, like, him being maybe out of shape or maybe not as focused or whatever? Or is it everything's gravy with Kyrie still?
We're going to get to this a little bit in another question I know that you're going to ask, but I am not super worried about Kyrie because I think he has something to prove still this year. I think last year it was very clear just by watching how much better he was in June versus when he came back from his knee injury that he was playing himself into shape all year. And I think there's a case to be made that he hasn't actually put together the season next to LeBron that I think people maybe thought he could get to, and I think it's possible that it's this year. And I think he is going to have nights where LeBron is going to rest. Like, I expect LeBron to actually rest, and maybe not as much as he did 2 years ago when he took that sabbatical in Miami, but I think there's going to be nights where it has to be Kyrie's team, and I don't know if he's actually going to have the opportunity to rest as much as he might need to sometimes or want to sometimes if they're playing, like, you know, if they're playing the Nets on a random Wednesday in February or something, he might want to just coast a little bit. I don't know if he's always going to have the opportunity to do that. I actually think this is going to be a very big learning season for Kyrie because he's kind of like him and Schroeder are close in age, and I think Kyrie has a lot on him in the future, and I think this year's the first step towards that, at least in the regular season.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, Kyrie's probably – I think I'm lower on Kyrie than most people are from Cleveland, at least. But that's a guy with – obviously, we saw the talent late in the year and during the title run. And I think it might be good for him, actually, to have LeBron, you know, take a few more games off and have him, you know, sort of get his and have him sort of dominate in the way that he's capable of doing. Even on those nights where, obviously, when LeBron's around, he's not going to be dominating in the same way, even though we've seen that he can do that. But when LeBron's taking some time off, it could be the Kyrie show for sure, especially with some of the other roster concerns, for as much as roster concerns you could have for a team that just won the title.
Yeah, and I would also say this, and then I'll ask you my second question. I think the peak for Kyrie, it's and people are going to get really mad at me for saying this, I guess, but I think that the idea of his peak is sort of what Curry is, not in the sense that he'll be as good as Curry, because I don't necessarily believe that, but I think Curry puts an effort on defense enough where people don't rag on him as much for it, and I think Kyrie actually has to do that one season for people to stop caring that he loafs sometimes, because every NBA player, especially the ones that are doing a lot on offense, loaf. His is just kind of exaggerated, I think, but that's that's something that I think is probably where he actually has to put in effort all year, and then it won't matter as much. But my second question is about a guy that Cavs fans who were fans during LeBron's first tenure that we'll be familiar with. And if you follow the NBA, he's maybe been the biggest enigma in the NBA over the past 5 or 6 years. That's Dwight Howard. So, Brad, what are you expecting out of Dwight Howard, who obviously is a very different player than Al Horford?
Yeah, that's sort of the basis of everything, is that they're so different. Even though they play the same position, they're both very good players. It'd be difficult to find two guys at the same position who play more differently than Howard and Horford. So it's really more of a challenge to me for the coaching staff, more than anything else, to kind of just overhaul everything. Since Mike Budenholzer got here, he's had Al Horford and really Paul Millsap for the great majority of that time. And having to build around Howard and really Schroeder, like we talked about earlier, is going to be very different. And that it's just a lot of different strengths. Like, I didn't love the Howard move. You know, listeners to my podcast will definitely know that, but I'll say it now here just for the benefit of everyone, is that I really kind of hated the move, and not necessarily not keeping Horford, because you can talk yourself into letting a guy go who gets a 4-year max, and it probably would have been a 5-year max to keep him. But going with Howard as a sort of a stopgap option is not what I would have done. But now that it's done, Howard's a guy where you have to sort of build around him, try to talk him out of trying to be a post-up guy. We kind of, NBA people always poke fun at Dwight for wanting a lot of post-ups and not being particularly good at that, whereas he's actually very good in the pick and roll, and he's still a very good defensive player, even if he's not what he was at his absolute peak when he was terrorizing everybody as the best defensive player in the league. Howard's still very good on that end. It's just going to be interesting to watch him with the Hawks on a team that's been predicated on having, five shooters on the court at all times, and really sort of this pace and space where taking advantage of Horford's versatility and his shooting ability, whereas Howard can't shoot. He's not going to be able to go do that. He's not going to be able to go handle the ball. He's not going to be as good at flashing out defensively on high screens as Horford, who's extremely mobile to the point where people actually think he's still a power forward, which makes me laugh every time I hear it. But it's going to be a really big change for Budenholzer and the staff. And you mentioned Howard being an enigma. That's the other part of this, where if he's not focused in a way that is going to be befitting of this system, this is a very a team that's worried about culture a lot in the locker room, and if Howard's not locked in and Howard's not buying into what Budenholzer is selling, it could get ugly in a hurry, which is one of the reasons I didn't love it. But if all goes well, he'll be a good, productive player. It's just sort of a lot of challenges in fitting him in versus what it's been over the last couple of years.
That, to me, is the most fascinating thing about the Hawks this year. Horford doesn't really fit in what they've been the past couple of years. He's not a guy that I can just envision going in and doing what Horford did. And he's still very good. Like, he's a good player. He's maybe not the most, he's not peak Dwight anymore. He's not the same Dwight that was, like, a truly, truly foundational player for the Magic. But he's, like, still good. I mean, a friend of the network, Matt Moore, everyone's favorite person on Twitter, because his mentions are always totally clean.
yeah.
I think he named him the Hawks' most underrated player in a piece on CBS Sports from last Thursday. And obviously this being Monday, like, it's last Thursday. He's still good. I just want to see how it works. I mean, him and, like, maybe I'm overstating this, but I feel like the Schroeder and Howard thing is just like a very different reality than what we saw with Teague and Horford. And maybe a change was needed in some ways. Maybe, and I know you're not a fan. I'm not really a fan of it either. I didn't really get it at the time because I love Al Horford. And I know you probably are aware that Cavs fans like to rag on Al Horford because Tristan Thompson has done very well against him in the playoffs. But Al Horford is freaking awesome. He's so smart. He's so skilled. He's very much a center, like you alluded
to.
Yeah, that's just like the power forward thing is just the dumbest thing. But I really want to see how this Horford thing works, because I think it could turn out well, but it also could just be not great. Because I mean, the two places he went to after Orlando, and where he was supposed to be like one of the guys or the guy, it didn't really work.
No, it didn't. And, on the bright side for Dwight, he is coming home to Atlanta. He's from Atlanta. So people are just kind of overlooking the fit concerns for the most part and just thinking, oh, he'll buy it. He's coming home. He's changed. And the Hawks were obviously sold on Howard's attitude adjustment. They've said that over and over again. The front office has since signing him. But, you know, that's a couple of meetings in early July. That's not a full-on, you know, inclusion with the team. So I'm still worried about fit, and I will be until we get into probably year two or three of this thing. Even after 1 year, I don't think I'll be satisfied with not worrying about Howard's fit, even if everything goes well. He's just that kind of track record, that kind of personality. Not the worst guy in the world by any means, but just a guy who, trouble and sort of issues seem to follow Dwight around. I'm not blaming him for Houston last year, but he's certainly didn't help things, I don't think, from what we know and what's been reported on there. It was not his fault necessarily with the Rockets, but he didn't do a lot to fix it either. So I think on the court, you mentioned he's still a good player, and he is, especially defensively. I worry a little bit about his offense, especially in Atlanta, where they don't have a ton of shooting around him. That's going to be an interesting fit concern actually on the court. And that Dwight's always been at his best when he's surrounded by a lot of shooting, and the Hawks don't really have that much shooting on this roster. They have some guys who are decent shooters, but not great. Other than Kyle Korver, it's really kind of a mismatch of, you know, average shooters and not great ones. So that'll be an interesting fit. But Howard's, you know, he's a good player. He still has I think I'll disagree with Matt on the underrated thing, but at the same time, it's not egregious at all. I understand the point he's making in that Dwight probably is underrated now because of the personality stuff and the fact that people just don't like him as a guy or as a personality. But I think, you know, Dwight is still a good player. This is not me crapping on Dwight as the player. I just think, as you said, Al Horford's awesome, and I think he's a slightly better player. But Howard could be good, man. If he can recapture sort of some of that old form and really lock in with the culture and sort of be refocused in his home base, it could be a lot of fun on the upside of things, if I'm trying to be positive.
Now, before we move on, does Atlanta, because you mentioned this, I hadn't even thought about this, is Atlanta, like, excited about Dwight coming home? Because I he's from there, but he hasn't been there in so long, and he's never really publicly been a guy who's, like, talked about Atlanta, at least from my understanding.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, Atlanta, just for background, like, basically has never signed a marquee free agent ever. They did sign Paul Millsap 4 years ago, but they got Paul on this like hilariously cheap 2-year $19 million deal. That's like one of the deals of the century that Danny Ferry made. I know we're not allowed to talk about Danny Ferry being a good GM, but he did an incredible job personnel-wise. But aside from Paul Millsap, they really haven't been able to sign a marquee free agent. So Dwight just being very famous and being from Atlanta has really made people really latch on. I've caught a lot of heat, and really a lot of our writers at Peachtree Hoops that really didn't like the move, Chris Willis and I, for the most part, have caught a lot of heat from the fan base about being negative about the Howard thing because people are overrating him locally and sort of thinking that he's still the guy that he used to be because he's famous. I mean, that does matter for a team that has never, you know, been able to make that big splash since Dominique Wilkins. I think since Dominique left, I mean, maybe to come in Mutombo, but I think Dwight Howard's probably the most famous basketball player that's played in Atlanta since then. It's just one of those situations where fan base is probably higher, at least the casual fans are probably higher on Dwight than he actually, you know, is. So in general, I think people are excited, but there is this contingent of people who think like I do and just are worried more about the fit stuff. And worry that this cohesive unit's going to be frayed in a way that we haven't seen under Budenholzer. But, you know, when you have a former coach of the year who's also in charge of player personnel, he kind of gets that full reign. And that comes with a little bit of trust that I have in Bud. So I think with another coach, I'd be even more worried about this. But with Budenholzer, I have some faith that he can just kind of mold this thing into what it needs to be.
Yeah, I think I really can't wait to see it. But it's just the Hawks for what we've already talked about, I think, are just so, so fascinating. Maybe more, I think more so than maybe almost every other team in the East, just because they were so good and played this distinct style, and there's some changes coming.
Yeah, it's definitely a spot where I think diehards like us are very interested in the Hawks, whereas casual fans just don't care at all. But with Dwight, that should add a little bit of interest that we didn't normally see around the Hawks in the famed NBA TV years that we've just come through, where the Hawks are, you know, always on NBA TV in the playoffs, and if they're not, they're getting housed by the Cavs on national television. So, you know, that was a shout out for you guys, because I know you've enjoyed every playoff series against the Hawks recently.
Yeah, Cavs fans love seeing the Hawks.
Oh, as they should. It's the worst matchup possible for the Hawks. But, hey, we won't go down that road now. I did want to ask you, though, that's the second question. We talked a little bit about Kyrie earlier. I'm a little bit worried about the backup spot for Cleveland. Are you worried about the backup point guard spot, especially now with the Mo Williams retirement stuff? And you mentioned Kay Felder earlier. There's not a lot going on with Dele gone. Are you worried about backup point guard at all?
I will be in January because that's what I think they're going to – like I mentioned they're not going to coast, I guess, right away. But, like, I think in January when they start turning the corner a little bit, I will be. But, yeah. Mo Williams hasn't really been what the Cavs need a backup point guard for a couple of years. He's not a good defender. He's inefficient. And now he has these old man knees, basically, where he can't really move that well. And he played a role in the finals, yeah, but he literally had to sit out games last year because he had basically what equates to, like, tennis player knee or something like that. Like, he just had, like, a knee. It's just he's older, and he has all this wear and tear on it, and he just can't play at that level. Cavs fans in general are very, very high in Kay Felder. And from speaking to people in the organization and speaking to people to his college coach, Greg Campy, they're really high in him, too, and I think you saw that by seeing what they did by paying over $2 million to buy a pick from the Hawks, coincidentally, and then picking him in the second round. But I don't really think he's going to be ready to play from day one. He's not big. He's not a good off-ball shooter. He's super athletic for someone his size, and he can really get up there. He's got a really good base skill set for someone that was not playing at the highest level of college basketball, and I'm not going to admit that I'm super familiar with him watching him in college because I'm not the biggest college basketball fan. I'll watch some of it. I'll watch my alma mater, Ohio University, but I will not go out of my way to watch, like, a random Oakland University game.
The Bobcats, by the way.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to the Ohio Bobcats. Like, half of Fear the Sword. Half of Fear the Sword is, like, Ohio Bobcats now because of me. But, like, I just don't know. And I wonder if there were better options. I don't really think Mario Chalmers coming off an Achilles is a good option. I'm not a big fan of Norris Cole, because he can't really shoot, and he apparently wants a ton of money, and he's, like, not on Clutch Sports anymore, and that matters because of LeBron. And, you know, I like Quinn Cook, and they apparently didn't want to go with him, and they saw him for a year and a half with the Canton Charge and in Summer League. So, yeah, I would say I'm worried. I don't think it matters as much, because what Dele was sort of a two-guard hybrid, because he shot threes, and he's not a good ball handler. I mean, his best thing on offense was literally throwing these awful lobs in kind of quasi pick and rolls with Tristan Thompson. Like, there's no reason those should have worked, and they did. And you can replace that. And LeBron's going to basically be a backup point guard anyway when this season matters in April and May and June. But I think for the whole season, I'd be a little bit worried. I don't think it's the biggest issue, but it's not ideal when you look at that roster.
Yeah, Hawks fans obviously hate Matthew Dellavedova, as a lot of fans do around the NBA, but you mentioned the fit stuff with Dele. I don't think it's as big of a loss as people do, but Dele is a perfect fit with a guy like LeBron on the team because you mentioned him playing shooting guard offensively, essentially, and non-coincidentally, he went to Milwaukee where he's going to do the same thing with Giannis. That's sort of the perfect spot for a guy like Dele to be in. But
100% agree.
Yeah, with Kyrie... Kyrie's durability stuff is really the only reason why I'd be a little bit worried about this. I actually love Kay Felder and watched him a lot more in college than it sounds like you did. I'm sort of a weird mid-major college basketball guy. So I was huge in Kay Felder, and I was really upset that the Hawks sold that pick and it ended up being Kay Felder. They were never going to take that pick.
Yeah.
The Hawks were always going to sell that pick to somebody, but the fact that it was Felder means that I now have to hear about Kay Felder being good if for some reason he becomes awesome, and that means the Hawks sold Kay Felder, even though that's not really true, because I love Kay Felder. So you're right. He's not ready to play now as a rookie. No second-round rookie point guard is really ready to go for a championship team right away as a backup, but I think you can get away with it more when you have LeBron, like you said, and Felder might, by the end of the year, might be able to pick up the slack. But the Mo Williams thing, I agree with you, is overblown in that Mo Williams is just not very good anymore. It's just more of that safety net to know that you have a veteran guy, whereas you look down and you see this, you know, super unproven second-round rookie as your only option now, and that's kind of troublesome on the surface. But I do like Felder, and having LeBron really helps.
My theory of how they're going to replace backup point guard minutes actually is I think they're going to try to use Amon Shumpert at point guard sometimes, which is
– Boy.
Yeah, I'm not a big I'm not the biggest Shump guy, but I think what they might do, at least early on, while Felder develops and if Mo Williams retires or just can't play, is they're and actually it's not the worst option. You can put a lot of the ability on LeBron to handle the ball, and Shump, if he can just get a little bit better as a shooter and a little bit more consistent as a creator, he can be fine as this as a big one, and they can have these really big bench lineups that can hit a lot of threes. But yeah, your reaction is basically my reaction, because I'm just picturing Shump just dribbling the ball off his foot like every time they try to run a pick and pop with him and Channing Frye. It's just inevitably going to go bad.
Yeah, I mean, you can get away with Shump in the same way that you sort of get away with Dele. Obviously, Dele's more of a point guard, but Shump just has to kind of stay out of the way offensively and guard the other team's point guard, as long as you have LeBron on the court, especially. If you don't, having Shump actually initiate offense would be pretty worrisome, I think. But the Cavs are probably good enough elsewhere where they could probably get away with a couple minutes per half with that lineup if they had to, and if they just find that Felder's unplayable, which is certainly possible. I mean, there's a reason he felt, past 50 in the draft, and it's going to be an untested rookie. So there's definitely a chance that Felder's unplayable, and if that becomes the case, the Cavs will be all in on the buyout market, I'm sure. And then if that doesn't work out for him, you got Shump, and could probably get creative. Do they still have a trade exception? Maybe start getting weird in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I believe they have two trade exceptions, because Dan Gilbert David Griffin, rather, is very, very good at getting these kind of crazy trade exceptions, like, out of trades. Like, I mean, when Dele went to the Bucks, all the reports were that he was just going to let him walk, and then he manufactured a deal where he traded Dele, got a trade exception, used that trade exception to get Mike Dunleavy. And, like, it's just, like, little stuff like that matters. It's hard to see them, for me, using it, because it would just cost them a lot of money. And trade exceptions on their own aren't exactly good unless you can package something with them. Like, they got Channing Frye in a trade exception because they were able to give the Blazers salary relief by dumping Anderson Varejao's really, really bad big contract onto their books, and then they cut him and cut to save the money. So it is what it is, and we'll see if they do something. But before we move on, what do you like about Kay Felder, as someone speaking to someone like me who's only seen him play in summer league?
Yeah, I mean, you said most of it. He's super duper athletic, and you have to be that when you're as small as he is. So that's the concern, is that he's very tiny. But he can really score, even against guys who are bigger than him. And obviously the size is bigger in the NBA than it is in college, where he's playing mid-major. But even at his level, he was having to score against people that were much, much bigger than he is. And that athleticism and sort of that creativity around the rim, something I like a lot. He's also he's an awesome passer. He was sort of famous for being one of the leading scorers and assist guys in the entire country in college, which basically just never happens. Even in smaller places like Oakland, you don't see a guy that finishes like top five in the country in scoring and assists. That just doesn't happen. And that's how much he was productive at Oakland. Some of that stuff is, again, playing at slower competition, but his passing is legit. His scoring is legit. The shooting is not awesome by any stretch, but he can be a capable enough shooter down the line, I think. And he's exciting enough and explosive enough on defense where he can at least, I think, stick with most point guards. There's going to be some guys there are going to be concerns for him with size, those bigger guys in the John Wall, Westbrook, that bigger mold. That's going to be a problem for Kay Felder, because giving up, 6-8 inches, that's definitely an issue. But against a regular size point guard, he should be just fine defensively, and that's a guy I really like. I mean, it's a flyer. I'll admit that. It's a late 50s flyer on a guy that the Cavs, you said, they bought a pick. That's all this is. It's about, I mean, I can't remember what the actual number was, but
it was like 2.2 million, because it was like about the same amount as what the overall potential value of his contract is.
Yeah, so, that's for Dan Gilbert, fresh off a title, that's not money that you really care about. At least nobody outside of Dan Gilbert cares about that money. That money's gone now. So go ahead and do it. Go take a guy that I think he was the best player available at that position. If the Cavs were really looking to get a guy who could play this year, go get a guy who was a 4-year player in college and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think they're going to at least try him. I kind of want to see him in Canton, but we'll see.
I think he'll visit Canton at some point. That's my guess.
I hope it'd be good for him. I kind of think it'd be good for him, just because he'd actually get to play, and Canton's literally 45 minutes to an hour from Cleveland, so we could literally practice with LeBron and practice with Kyrie and practice under Coach Phil Handy, who really has played a big part in developing Kyrie the last 2 years. It's been like, he can still do that and play with the Charge and at least play a little bit, even if they aren't exactly the best there isn't the best talent level in Canton with some of the guys it looks like they're going to have in that team. So my last question for you is just big picture here, and it's a little bit early, so I'm putting you on the spot, I guess, but can this team be as good as they were the past few years when they were one of the best teams in the East, and 2 years ago were the best team in the East during the regular season?
You know, can they be? My technical answer, I think, is yes. I think 2 years ago, the 60-win team, that's not going to happen. That was not a 60-win team in my estimation. That's a team that got super-duper hot for about a month and a half. But even then, that was a true, you know, mid-50s team probably in terms of wins. And this team is not going to be as good as that in my estimation. I guess if everything went perfectly well with Howard and Schroeder both, then sure, maybe 50-win team at the most. But I think the safe bet is to say that this is going to be a step back from the last couple of years. I think it's just it's more volatile, which means the upside should be higher. But the baseline is certainly lower, I think, than what we've seen recently, just because the safety is gone. The bench, there's some concerns that, you know, backup point guard's a concern. They signed Malcolm Delaney out of Europe, who's a guy I actually like, but he's a 27-year-old who hasn't played in the NBA yet. So that's a concern going from, even if you think Schroeder is going to be as good as Teague was, they're going from Teague and Schroeder to Schroeder and a guy who's never played the NBA before. So that's a drop off. Obviously, I think that Howard is a drop off from Horford, even if it's not a huge one. And you got some more age from certain guys on the wing, like Kyle Korver's a year older. Seth Loesch is a year older. I'm not a big Tim Hardaway guy. Kent Bazemore had the best year of his career last year. And I think that might be the best year he ever has. So there's some issues. Same goes for Paul Millsap, who is absolutely incredible and a guy I haven't mentioned on this podcast yet, but Millsap's awesome. But we might have seen his career year last year. He was 31, like he's going to be 32, and he was, you know, one of the best 15, 20 players in the league a year ago, and he might be that again, but he's not going to get any better, that's for sure. So I think it's pretty safe to think they're going to take a step back, especially with the East being a little bit better. But maybe it's just me being an eternal pessimist. I just don't think it's in the cards to be as good as they were last year.
Yeah, I think it's totally possible that they slide a little bit. I think they're for sure a playoff team. And I'm with you. I think that could have been Horford's or Millsap's career year. And Millsap was awesome. Like, it speaks to kind of incidentally how underrated he is that we literally went over 30 minutes and hadn't mentioned him yet because he's awesome. He's legitimately one of the best power forwards in the NBA.
It happens to me all the time too. When I do shows with other people, it's like, oh yeah, we should probably talk about Paul Millsap, who's the best player on the team by far, and who was absolutely awesome last year. So it's not your fault. That just happens. Yeah. Paul's sort of an anonymous guy, but he's awesome.
Yeah, he's super awesome. And I currently, in my way too early write ups at least, I think I have them fourth or fifth, right in that range. I like Boston, I like Toronto, and the Cavs ahead of them, but I could see them still ending up two if things break correctly. But I'm kind of with you. I kind of need to see it happen, and I'm a little bit pessimistic about it before I say, oh, the Hawks are going to be fine. I need to, like, see them play, like, 50 games or something like that and see where they're at then after they've played some of the better teams in the East and see how they do against Boston and see how they do against Toronto and see how they do against, like, Washington or something. Because it's, like, interesting, too, because the East should be better, but I also don't think there's teams I feel 100% sure that they're going to leap past Atlanta, even if Atlanta has regressed a little bit.
Yeah, those three teams that you mentioned, Cleveland, Boston, Toronto, are the three that I'm sure are better than the Hawks, at least as sure as someone can be right now. Cleveland is obviously a lock, but the other two, I'm pretty confident, are better than the Hawks right now. But, you know, part of me being low on the Hawks is being mitigated by the fact that I can't really pick teams that I think are definitely better than them outside of those top three. I think I'm going to pick Detroit ahead of them. But aside from that, like, you're talking about teams like Washington and Charlotte and Miami and Milwaukee, and, you know, there's teams that, you know, maybe could finish ahead of the Hawks. And I've sort of caught flack for saying the Hawks could miss the playoffs if things went just ugly with Howard or Schroeder. But, you know, I'm not going to pick them to miss the playoffs. There's just nobody outside of those top three and maybe Detroit that I'm, you know, confident is better than the Hawks. So as much as I feel negative about the team, there's still that sense of safety with Budenholzer and Millsap and this, you know, maybe not most of the core being there, but just sort of the same principles being around to where there's no way I'm picking them to miss the playoffs. And I think they're going to land somewhere in that, you know, 5-7 range. So probably a little bit lower than you are, I guess, but not super duper low. And I'd still be surprised if it's the playoffs. I just don't think it's I still think it's a 0% chance. I think it's at least possible if things go wrong. But you know, I'm pretty low on some counts, and I'm pretty high on the fact that I think they're just not going to miss the playoffs. This is a solid enough roster and solid enough coaching staff where I'm somewhere in that low 40s, I think, is probably the place where the basement lies, unless I'm just trying to be super pessimistic.
Yeah, if there's two teams that out of the top three, the consensus top three, at least among us, that I think could jump Atlanta, it would probably be the Pistons, you mentioned, because I love that team. They're so young, and they just play so hard, and Van Gundy's awesome. And maybe the Pacers. I feel weird about the Pacers just because I don't really trust Nate McMillan, and I definitely don't like Monta Ellis as that team's two guard. But that's like a whole other...
Ellis, you're absolutely right on that.
the Monta Ellis rabbit hole is a rabbit hole no one really ever needs to go down, ever. Like, it's been done enough. Like, we can all just stay away.
I'm with you 100% on that one. And Indy's defense scares me. I'll say that before. I mean, outside of Paul George, there's some defensive issues that could rise.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. Although I will cape for CJ Miles forever and ever and ever.
I do. Yeah, I do like some of those guys on that team. Before we wrap this thing up, I do have one more thing to ask you. I have to ask you about a guy I've loved for a long time, Mike Dunleavy, and it sort of wraps up into a bigger question, but what are you expecting from Dunleavy this year? And really another guy that I wanted to ask you is Richard Jefferson. What are you expecting from these sort of older guys? Jefferson, you know, was famously retired for a minute before deciding to come back, and you know, the Cavs could be relying on at least one of those two guys for some real minutes down, especially in crunch time. Are you feeling okay with those two older gentlemen being involved in the proceedings, or is it a situation where Cleveland could be looking for a little bit of help down the line if Jefferson's just suddenly done here?
It's tough. I don't feel 100% great about it. I think everyone feels really, really good about Richard Jefferson off of the finals, but he wasn't great all year. He was not great for most of the year, and if you look at some of the numbers of what position he was playing, Ian Levy from FanSided pointed this out to me in an article he wrote. Jefferson was a below replacement level at small forward, but he was above replacement as a small ball four. And with Dunleavy, I'm a big fan too. I've liked him for a long time, and I know he really, really pisses people off when he plays against them. The Cavs just had to still have that because Dele is now on the Bucks, so it won't be as intense, but it's still going to be there. Because it wasn't it Dunleavy who got kind of checked by Giannis 2 years ago in a playoff series?
Yeah, he's always involved in stuff. He's definitely an instigator and a guy you don't like when he's on the other team, and a guy everybody loves if he's on your team, I think.
Yeah. I think if his back is good and he can move, he's going to be so useful on this team because all he's really going to have to do is play some solid defense and then hit threes. And I'm picturing these bench units where it's LeBron, Dunleavy, and Channing Frye. Like, and no matter who else is on the floor, probably Richard Jefferson. You know, maybe you have Kevin Love on there too or something like that, and whoever the point guard is. He's going to get a ton of open threes just because LeBron draws that attention, and I feel like opposing defenses are going to be scrambling to try to defend him and Channing Frye. His role, if he's just healthy enough to do it with the back, because back injuries, especially when you're past 30, are no joke. If he's good to go, I think he's a great pickup. I think he's kind of what they needed. I think they needed another wing who can shoot. It lessens my worry. It lessens my concern about Shumpert a little bit because Shumpert, I'm not the biggest fan of him. Just not a good shooter. Just kind of not good. To be quite blunt.
just not good. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. It's a good
explanation. like Cavs fans, some of them will defend him. I just don't get it at this point. He'd have to take a big step forward this year. That's like something. I think it's going to be so fascinating to see how he does. But if Dunleavy is healthy, I think he's great. And if Jefferson can just keep that magic alive for the nights that it matters and the situations that it matters, I think it's fine. But it was just so random that he was that good in the finals, then he was going to retire and came back. So I don't know if you can bank on it. I think if you get both of them playing well, I think that's the dream scenario. But if I was going to say, if I was more confident in one, it'd actually probably be Dunleavy just because he seems like he's healthy. You think that they wouldn't have made that deal for him if they didn't think he was healthy. And his role is just easier for me to envision him having the success because of his ability as a shooter with LeBron than Jefferson, you know, pushing back Father Time for another, you know, 12 months.
Yeah, you could talk me into Dunleavy being better than Jefferson. If you could tell me that both guys are healthy, I'd rather have Dunleavy. It's just whether you think Dunleavy can be healthy or not.
Yeah.
which is obviously not – it's definitely up in the air. But I think, you know, people outside of Cleveland – I know you guys know this, but the more casual people, especially Hawks fans listening, you know, the Cavs wouldn't have won the title without that Jefferson renaissance at the end of the year. Like, he was that important in the finals. He was incredible.
Yeah,
and it's just, and
he's legitimately like a fan favorite now. Like his Snapchat is something of legend.
Yeah, I know you guys know that. I'm just really, it's really for Hawks fans, like Hawks fans, and other people, and other casual fans across the league. Like Jefferson was that important to that series. Like they do not win it without Jefferson. So getting something from that spot, whether it be from Jefferson or for Dunleavy or whoever else playing, because you mentioned that Jefferson's more of a four now than anything else. But those two guys are, you know, one of them, I think, if both those guys flame out, the Cavs could have a little bit of a hole. Again, these are rich man's problems because Cleveland's going to be really good either way. But if neither of those guys are healthier or productive, that could be an issue for the end of the bench for sure.
Yeah, I think they probably need both of them for the one series that I think most people, including myself, expect to see in June against Golden State. Because Golden State, when it comes down to it, is going to run out that five-man lineup at the end of a game of Curry, Thompson, Durant, Iguodala, and Draymond Green. The Cavs
seems pretty familiar to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Cavs are going to need something to match that, and yeah, I think you may have to try the Kevin Love thing and just see how that works, if you can get something out of him and he can just do enough. But my hunch ends up being that they have to try to play at least one of those guys with LeBron, and I think the size of Dunleavy would really help instead of, and his ability as a shooter would really help. I can make Steph work off the ball and all kinds of stuff. You probably need both those guys when it really matters, and you just, I don't know if you can say 100% that works out that way. It's something to watch. It's something to see how it develops. But I also just don't think Jefferson, he wasn't that good in the regular season last year. He had a couple games where he was nice and he was useful, and he really didn't really turn it on until later in the playoffs. And then he had a couple games in the playoffs that mattered. And then in the finals, as you mentioned, he like solidified himself and really turned himself into a Cavs fan hero for like a ton of reasons. And he was just essential to them winning in a way that I definitely would not have expected.
I mean, he's 36 years old, and like we all thought he was dead. Like a couple years ago, he was basically on his way out of the league, and now he's suddenly this hero figure. So banking on Jefferson to be good again is a pretty aggressive, and I think at least you know that, and I think Cavs fans probably realize that, but it's something I would be a little bit worried about. But I do love that Dunleavy signing, because that's just a guy. That was a guy Kate for the Hawks trying to sign. The last time he was a free agent before he signed Chicago, I was really upset the Hawks didn't outbid Chicago. I think it was like a 3-year, $12 million deal. And I was like, that's not enough money. Mike Dunleavy's great when he's healthy.
He's on a freaking bargain of a contract. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's really he'll be really good for Cleveland in a scary way if he's healthy, and that's as if Cleveland needed to be more scary in the Eastern Conference. Dunleavy adds another layer of a guy who's just a really actual serious knockdown shooter on the wing they don't really have right now. So that's a terrifying wrinkle that they can throw out there if he's available to play.
Yeah. So to kind of wrap this up, Brad, we're gonna make just quick predictions. We'll each make predictions for both the Cavs and the Hawks. For me, I will say I think the Cavs will finish atop the East. I think they're maybe going to win a few less games than last year. I'm going to say they finish two games up on the Celtics. I think it'll be close, or the Celtics or the Raptors. But I think they'll finish atop the East. And as I sort of mentioned already, I think the Hawks are going to finish either fourth or fifth. I still like that team as a whole. I'm not convinced teams are going to jump them. Like, I just can't feel confident today saying that the Wizards are going to jump them. Like, the Wizards and Pistons are going to jump them. So that's where I'm going to stand. I would not shock me again if we saw these two teams play in the playoffs again next year.
Oh, I don't want to think about that series. although, I'll say this. The Hawks match up probably better against Cleveland now than they did then, only because Howard is a much better matchup against Cleveland than Horford was.
Yeah, it's going to be 2011 all over again with Dwight Howard and the Cavs.
Horford is a better player, but Howard would be a better matchup against Cleveland. Anyway, before we get too deep into that, for the Cavs, I think, number one seed, pretty convinced of that. Even if I think they're going to take it easy a little bit the regular season, I don't think there's anybody out there that's going to go up there and challenge them. I do agree with you, though, that Boston is the most likely number two seed. You know, Cleveland probably cruises to like a 3-4 win, maybe 5-win edge over anybody else in the conference. As for the Hawks, I'm going to go with like maybe a 6 seed. I'll say the top three. I'll go with Detroit and then either Indiana or Washington or Charlotte. Somebody's going to beat the Hawks for that fifth seed. So I'll go sixth seed for the Hawks, and which takes them away from Cleveland in the playoffs, which is just fine with me. I would almost rather endure a first round exit than have to deal with Cleveland again and have to cover that series again, because it's just not been a lot of fun the last 2 years in that building, watching just the destruction take place.
Yeah, and they played out like relatively the same, oddly enough, and it's just the Cavs. I don't know. It was just weird to see that again, I guess. And I wouldn't mind something different for the Cavs. I always kind of root for the series that are just interesting, because I'd rather just not watch. Like, I don't want to ever watch the Clippers play those like the Grizzlies or whatever. Like, again, like, I don't need that in my life. I really don't.
Yeah, I just, you know, Cavs fans should almost root for it because it's just such a great matchup. But at the same time, I think we're all ready to watch something else transpire. And look, if the Hawks are in the playoffs this year, I'll be happy, even if it's as the 7-8 seed. I just don't want it to be a disaster. And I have this like lingering fear that there is a disastrous scenario lurking with Dwight and some of the other stuff. So I'll be happy if they're just in a series, as long as it's not against Cleveland.
Yeah, that is fair enough. So for me and Locked On Cavs, you can find, as always, the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever. Please rate us and review us if you're a fan of the show. It helps other people find the show, and we just appreciate the feedback. And, you know, again, if you have a mailbag question for next week, submit it to me on Twitter at Locked On Cavs, or to email at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com.
And most of the same stuff for the Hawks. We're on iTunes. Subscribe and review, and every site you could possibly imagine that plays podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all those fun places, Audio Boom, which hosts our podcasts. Go visit us. We're also hosted at Peachtree Hoops if you want to go check me out on writing or audio form there. And SB Nation, Chris is also an SB Nation guy at Fear of the Sword. So we have another thing in common. In that one. So yeah, just subscribe to both shows. For even if you don't want to listen to both shows, subscribe, download, leave a review, do whatever you need to do. Pump us up, pump up the whole Locked On Network. We all will certainly appreciate that, and tell your friends if they're a fan of another team to go find that team show. Do whatever you can to help us.
Yeah, there's literally almost every team in the Locked On Podcast Network now. There's a ton of great NFL podcasts. As they said, Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, Greg Allman's Tampa Bay Bucks podcast, Locked On Bucks is great. And there's a ton of great NBA podcasts. Brad is great. You have Sean Hyken from Locked On Bulls. He'll be on Locked On Cavs later on. He's got a great show. And there's literally almost every team. And I think, you know, by the start of the season, I think maybe close to all of them, if not all of them, are going to be in the network. And as Brad said, it is just go pump us up. We're, I think, all doing really great work, and there's literally just so much amazing stuff in this network. And I don't know if and you would agree, Brad, I think, but we're just covering every base, and I think every day we're there daily and just giving fans, I think, the best podcast that we can possibly provide.
Absolutely. We're killing it, and we wrap up the season. It's going to be a lot of fun to get this thing going when there's actual basketball to talk about, so that'll be a lot of fun, and we're almost there, man.
Yeah, I really can't wait for actual basketball. Like, it's killing me right now to like get excited about Markel Brown in training camp or something like that. Like, it's at that point.
Just give me something. Yeah, inject it into my veins, the basketball. Thanks for doing this, though, man. I appreciate it.
No,
it was awesome.
Yeah, no, of course. It was great to collab. We'll have to do it again once the season gets going. But thanks to all our listeners out there. And I think, speaking for both of us, we'll both have different podcasts up tomorrow. And we'll talk to you guys soon.